Hello, VGCasters. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of VGCast. VGCast, of course, is our video game podcast where we digest the latest video game news and our changelog, where we chat about what we've been playing in our game queue and what to look forward to in the world of the video game industry. I'm your host, Brad Johansson, and with me today, as always, our co-host, our friend, the man who put the T in Fallout and Tomb Raider, Troy Giles. What's up, man?
Nothing much. Hoping that everybody's listening to this on their brand new Pit Boys out there. Plugging that holotape of the VG cast in there.
Yeah, make sure you go to the radio section, the radio tab, and turn it to VG cast beacon broadcast.
You know they're just listening to Diamond City Radio.
I gotta admit, that's the only thing I listen to there. Yeah. I try to listen to the classic rock thing. Classical music. Mm-hmm. But I just missed the DJ, because there's a DJ in the Diamond City. Anybody who doesn't know, playing Fallout 4, your little Pip-Boy, it's on your arm. You can listen to different radio stations. I say different, there's really only like two. But one of them has like his own DJ, kind of like Grand Theft Auto, has a DJ on almost every radio station in their game. So that's what he's referring to. But, oh yeah, man, we are back with another episode where we're going to talk mostly Fallout 4. Mm-hmm. But since we've both been playing that before, we got to start our show like we always do, and that's with our changelog. Changelog, of course, is the part of the show where we talk about the biggest news in video games. So, Troy, as our guest, as our co-host, rather, what's at the top of your changelog, man?
Since there wasn't like a lot of news this week, I'm going to probably go with Xbox One finally giving the new update for the... Ooh. For the dashboard and all that, yeah. And the backwards compatibility list, finally, for everybody. I mean, some people who were in the preview program got it a little bit earlier. They were able to check out the new dashboard and everything like that. And, you know, it's not that bad. I like it. Nice and vertical instead of horizontal.
It's not that bad. That's a really good way of putting it. I was actually one of those people in the beta, so I've had it for a few days now. In your opinion, what's like the biggest strength of this new dashboard experience?
It seems to be a little bit easier to navigate things, kind of. especially like if you've done like five different things, you can just go down and you can see the listing of, oh, you were on Netflix and then you were on YouTube and then you were playing a game and, you know, Blu-ray player and all that stuff. It seems a little bit easier to navigate for that. I haven't really dived deep into it. Like, I haven't really gone to, like, okay, let me go through and try and find a movie on Xbox or something like that. It seems nice. It almost seems aesthetically pleasing to me. I don't know. I like the verticality of things. I don't really like going left to right too much.
A la PlayStation.
Yeah, or a la Xbox 360 with the blades. Well, yeah, I actually like the blades, but I mean...
Well, the blades were side to side. They weren't really vertical.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. It's different.
Do you have any beefs with it yet?
Not yet. I mean, like I said, I really haven't been playing my Xbox One too much, and if I do, I don't have to do too much to it. It's like, all right. Netflix or Tomb Raider. I mean, it's either switch one between one or the other.
Right.
So.
I have not really complaints, but I'm a little confused as to what they were going for. Mm-hmm. And what you were talking about just a second ago was with those quick access locations, I guess you could say, right below the main screen. Because when you boot it up, you still have this very large square. Everything's mostly tiles still. But when you boot it up, you have this main square that was where your old main square was. So the last thing you were doing, whether a game or Netflix, it has this huge live tile right there in front of you. And that's still there, right? But when you scroll down, right below like that area are, I assume it's just your most recent three apps?
Because
I
only see three.
Yeah. So like you said, if you just did Blu-ray or if you just did Netflix or if you just did Tomb Raider, those three will be right there in a row, and they have little game hub decals that list some information that might say two people are playing the game. And that part's cool. It's just, if you remember from the old style last week, before we got this update, those previous icons were also right beneath the main screen. They were just a lot smaller.
Yeah.
And then if you went to the left, you got to all of your, I guess, pinned apps. Well, now those are two clicks to the bottom. So it's like they just moved everything that was down and to the left just completely down. So I didn't really understand, like, what makes that better, because it's still, it's the same motion, it's just in a different direction. And I feel like the console boots up a little slower now, but I don't know, before I leave that train, I don't know what it is, but I've noticed now when I turn the Xbox on, it sits there with a little circle in my name and like a silhouette, I guess, of me, and it just sits there and spins for a little bit, whereas before it would just boot right up to my account, like to my character. So I'm not sure what that is. Maybe they got some kinks to work out, but I do like how it does seem a little more fluid once everything gets going, whereas the previous dashboards seem to hang quite often, especially when playing games. So I do like that, and I think a lot of the rust from just viewing and operating this new experience will wear down the more we get used to it, and we'll like it more and more. But I do think there's some little things where I'm like, wait, what? This is the same thing. You still have to scroll all the way over to the right to get to the store. Like, it's a very similar layout to before. It's not that different, but that new side panel that pops up when you hit your guide button in a game and stuff, it's very similar to the 360, which I like. Mm-hmm. And I think it, especially the old school Blades 360, if you remember back then, they didn't have this square that popped up in the center of the screen. When you hit the guide button, it actually popped up to the side and you could access your information that way. So it's actually very similar to the new Xbox One experience. But overall, I think I'm happy with it. I think it's a fair improvement. Like, kind of like what you said at the beginning, it's all right. It's nothing groundbreaking, I don't think.
No, it's nothing groundbreaking, and neither is the list of the backwards compatibility of that you can play on this thing now, which is interesting to say the least.
Yeah, what is it, 100 and something?
104 games. And
mostly arcade titles, right?
Is yeah, right? Yeah. I mean, you see, if you look at the list, it's like Metal Slug 3, Missile Command, Monday Night Combat, Alien Hominid HD, Battle Block Theater, a lot of Xbox Live arcade titles, basically.
Interesting. I think Monday Night Combat servers are shut down.
But, yeah, you think that, but I mean, I guess they're still on. I guess people are still playing it. But I mean, you know, and they do have a couple of actual games like Fable 2, Fallout 3, all the Gears, some obscure ones like Operation Flashpoint for some reason, you know. Both Rainbow Six Vegas is 1 and 2. Just Cause 2. It's weird that a lot of the... It seems like you're getting a lot more sequels than you are getting the original games. Like Just Cause 2 instead of... Well, I don't know if Just Cause 1 was a 360 game or not.
I think it got remade for the 360. Mm-hmm.
Just like
Fable. You're right. It was originally on, yeah, but I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
If it was just like PlayStation only, or if it was 360.
We got a couple of the Lego games, Pirates of the Caribbean and Star Wars, things like that. I mean, it's interesting considering that they put out a listing of what people would want and people got to vote for it. And most of the titles that were up at the top did not make it to the list.
Like, Red Dead Redemption.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
But like okay. Microsoft says, it's more up to the company that made the game.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, maybe Rockstar doesn't want a Red Dead Redemption backwards compatibility. Maybe they're working on a, you know, up-res version of it or something.
Right.
You know, but things like Halo Reach, I believe that's coming in December, actually. And I think either Black Ops 1 or Black Ops 2 is coming in December as well. So, I mean, there's still some games that are coming out in December as well.
Right.
Yeah, Black Ops, Halo Wars, BioShock 1, 2, Infinite, Skate 3, things like that are coming later, you know, down the pipe. The interesting thing is like I plugged in a disc game. I had Fable 2. I plugged it in and pretty much it's like an emulator. Like, it's exactly like an emulator. They use the disc, if you have the disc, as like a proof of purchase, and they just download the game straight from the servers, and there you go. You play it. It's not.
Okay, so you're not actually using the disc.
Yeah, all the disc is proving is that you actually own the game.
Okay.
So, you know, I mean, I'm going to guess like some of the arcade titles, all you have to do is just find the arcade title.
So wait a minute, could you then, in theory, borrow someone's 360 game?
Well, you have to keep the, you have to, whenever you want to play the game again, you have to plug the disc in.
Okay.
Yeah, you
okay.
can't
so
just...
So it works similar to the 360, in which if you installed the game, you still had to have the disc, but in this case, instead of installing from the disc, they're just going ahead and downloading a copy.
Yeah, it's almost like, I guess PlayStation Now, kinda, except with PlayStation Now, you don't actually have to have the disc, you just download it, you know. It kind of has that feeling of it, but like I said, it's more of you just plug the disc in. It tells Microsoft, hey, they own this game. All right, they're free to download it and play it as long as the disc is in there. Once you take the disc out, you can't play it. So unless you actually own a digital copy of the game, you have to plug the disc in every time to play the game. So
I gotcha.
But, you know, it's interesting. Like I said, I wish the list was a little bit bigger and better. A lot of these games I don't even have, like Mirror's Edge or Banjo-Kazooie, Nuts and Bolts, or, you know, Nights in the Dreams.
I think anytime they add value for free, that's a really good thing. And I think this is awesome, especially going into arguably their strongest showing in video games since they've conceived the Xbox, and talking about this fall and just what all they're putting out, the deals that they're going to have. This is a really strong fall and season for Microsoft. And then to add on top of that, this release that there's a new update to the dashboard that makes it better. How much better doesn't matter. It makes it better. That's the point. But also 100+ games that you may already own now are playable on this machine where otherwise we're not, for free. That's pretty awesome, man. And if you look at the direct competition, like you mentioned PlayStation Now, it doesn't matter if you own the old games. Like, you have to rent all of those things through the streaming service. You have to stream those games. So, and you have to pay a subscription for it. So I think you can rent individual games if you want. It's like $19 for 5 hours or something like that. But you have to pay for every single game that you want to play on the PlayStation service. And I think that's crap. They're asking people to pay for games over and over again. And I think what Microsoft are doing is that's awesome, man. Give you 100. If you have like all those games in your shelf still, I know you probably have some 360 games. You just mentioned Fable. I've got some up there in the shelf as well. Like, that's great. Then all of a sudden, boom, now we've got our old games are now playable on this machine, which is what we wanted when this console first came out. So the fact that they're doing this is really awesome, I think.
Yeah. No, I mean, I feel like it's an awesome thing. And at least, like you said, it's free. As long as you have the games, it's free. So, and I'm pretty sure if you really want to play some of these games on an Xbox One and you never got a chance to play it on 360 like Borderlands, I'm pretty sure you could probably find it for like $2.99 in a used bin at GameStop or something.
You're probably right.
It won't be hard to get track down some of these games. It's just, like I said, I wish the list was a little bit better, but you take what you get. I mean,
right.
You know, I mean, I'm not going to look a gift horse in the mouth, but hopefully down the line we'll see the list expand. And like they said before, all the games that are now going to be on Games with Gold that you get free every month or so, like two games every month or so, now they'll be able to work on both the Xbox One and the 360 if they're 360 titles. So whatever 360 titles are on Games with Gold, you'll be able to download it on your Xbox One and play them on there. So
wow,
there's that plus. So, you know, and they've been pretty decent with Games with Gold. So, you know, you can't look a gift horse in the mouth with this. This is a good thing. This is a real good thing.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody who can complain about this. This is 100% great. It's great. I love that they're doing this.
But other than that, like I said, news, not a lot.
Well, I'm gonna kind of cheat and relate to the recent fallout of sales for the game Fallout. I don't know if you check this out, but according to multiple outlets, actually, I'm reading at the one at Eurogamer.net, Fallout 4, Bethesda, the developer of that, sold 12 million copies worldwide on day one. Now, granted, that is 12 million copies to retailers, but retailers generally don't buy titles in that quantity if they don't think they can sell them, right? So the GameStop, for example, will say, hey, we have 50 pre-orders. So that means we will probably, based on previous data, be able to sell 250 or something along those lines. That's a really rough estimate. So then the fact that the stores themselves bought 12 million copies is pretty insane. And that means it's going to, they'll probably meet that demand for a game like this. But what that means for Bethesda, it's $750 million in revenue, boom, right off the top. That doesn't account for the 1.8 million units sold digitally, at least that they can count so far. So right there, you got another few million dollars or so, right? Broke the record, though, on Steam, which I think this is really impressive because everyone likes to say very frequently, PC gaming is dying, PC gaming is dying. So I want to champion just for a second. Fallout 4 had an impressive, that was in quotes, 1.2 million owners on Steam on day one. That's pretty impressive. I think most of the time we're all pretty... We pretty much assume that the PC sales of a version of a game is going to be the lowest one. And I'm not saying this was not the lowest one, because it probably still was, but 1.2 million copies on day one for a PC game is pretty spectacular. So I think that's kudos to Bethesda, man. Wow, 12 million units. They're gunning for Grand Theft Auto at that point. What do you think they can pass Rockstar?
Well, I mean, the funny thing is, you mentioned Rockstar. When that news broke out on how many people were concurrently playing it, it was just below Grand Theft Auto, and then like an hour or two later, it surpassed Rockstar for the most amount of people playing it concurrently on Steam.
Yeah,
the only other games that could beat it were, of course, Dota, and I believe I want to say CS:GO. It's either Dota and CS:GO or Dota and. Is Liga a Steam title?
I don't think it's an officially a Steam title.
But can you play it on Steam?
I think so, yeah.
So, I mean, I think Dota and League were the ones that were ahead of it, which makes perfect sense. I mean, a lot of people love playing MOBAs. So, you know, if you're more of into the multiplayer thing, I can believe Dota and League were ahead of Fallout 4. But to come out number three, barely a week into being sold... You know, that's pretty amazing. And
right.
To make, you know, and to sell 1.2 million, 1.2 million units on the PC alone?
With a marketing strategy that only included, what, a couple of months? I mean, this thing, they came out E3, and I think it was July or June, and they said, boom, Fallout 4 comes out this November. So it's not like they had 2 years, Watch Dogs, to plan this marketing strategy to sell 12 million units. That's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, if you still watch television at all, I barely saw any commercials for Fallout until last month, really. I mean, maybe about the middle of last month, close to the beginning of November, you started seeing the Wanderer TV spot for it. And other than that, I mean, unless you paid attention to the video game outlets, which I'm going to guess most of our listeners are probably doing, you really didn't get a lot of lead up to it. But you know, everybody bought it. Everybody
seemed to buy it. If you had the unfortunate privilege to go into a GameStop recently, like I have, you probably saw it in there or heard it. It's the one with that really soft but epic music that starts playing, and you start looking around and like, is that kind of like Halo? No, it's not Halo. It's Fallout. Not dissing the Fallout soundtrack because I think it's great. But yeah, GameStop was running it pretty efficiently. I was in there twice, I think, about a month ago. One of which I have been meaning to talk about. I don't think we've really talked about. It was for freaking Mario Party 10, but I'm not in the mood to get really angry, so I'm not going to really talk about that. I don't think I got to talk about that. Have I talked about that on this show?
I don't think so, but I know where your frustrations are going to go.
Anyway.
I've heard stories.
Yeah, so in other sales news as well, Black Ops 3, it looks like they finally broke the trend of Call of Duty not selling as much as it has been. So that looks like Call of Duty is back doing really well again, $550 million. It looks like on day one or maybe that weekend. But what I was referring to is Ghosts and then Advanced Warfare seem to have this trend of Call of Duty looking like it's, you know, finally coming down. Granted, coming down for Call of Duty is still like heaven for every other game in terms of sales. But no, Black Ops 3 seemed to finally boost their sales back up, which that means, yep, you guys are getting Call of Duty every single year for the next 10 years, guaranteed. So, no, I don't mean that really negatively because I actually did kind of enjoy Black Ops 3, and I do have intent to actually go back and play it, you know, a little bit more multiplayer once I'm done with Fallout, once I'm done with Tomb Raider, once I'm done with the Uncharted series. This could get ugly. Anyway, kind of like Mad Max.
Jesus Christ. You say all these games and it's like, oh, I'll come back to Black Ops eventually. Next year.
It's bad because I can keep going. I didn't even talk about Metal Gear. I haven't even played that game.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Next spring, you'll be back to Black Ops when nobody else is playing it.
Nope, because Uncharted 4 will be out.
See,
and Ratchet and Clank.
By the time you play Black Ops 3, everybody's going to be so high level, you're going to get mad at yourself by trying to play it.
Yeah.
So might not.
What are you talking about? There already are high level. Yeah, exactly. Everyone's already gonna prestige. Be
worse. It's going to be a lot worse.
Yeah, you're not wrong. You're not wrong. Let's see. And the last little bit of news we will chat about before we get to our GameCube. This one you actually brought up to me fairly recently. The Nintendo Direct. And I thought this is interesting. They come back, which obviously they took a hiatus because of, I guess, their president, Satoru Iwata, passed away recently. Rest his soul. So they finally come back and they have a fairly positive Nintendo Direct doing, you know, what Nintendo does. Some of those announcements, we'll just quick run through them. Final Fantasy VII's main character, Cloud Strife, is confirmed for Super Smash Bros. Does that make you want to play some Smash?
Not really. I mean, I'm not really. You, so, I mean yeah. It's interesting. It's interesting to see that he's going to be in Smash, but okay.
Sure. Did you ever think you would see a day when you saw Cloud Strife from Final Fantasy VII in a Super Smash Bros. Nintendo game?
No, but I mean, come on. They have Sonic the Hedgehog and Mega Man.
They do have Ryu. Ryu is in there as well.
Yeah. Wait, Ryu who?
Ryu from Street Fighter. Hadouken.
Is he? Where's my right. I must not have been paying attention. So, now it makes some sense then, I guess, that they can get Cloud in there.
I want to see where this can go. Not where is it going necessarily, but where could this actually go? Could we get Master Chief in there? You know, like, why can't we just work something out, Nintendo?
Wasn't he in a fighting game?
Was he?
I think he was in one of the Dead or Alives.
Oh, that's right. He was for the Xbox version. I think it was actually a woman. It was not Master Chief.
Yeah, okay.
I think it was a different like spot. Kelly or something. Yeah, Kelly or Linda, one of those ladies. But yeah, you're right. He was in Dead or Alive, or she was. But yeah, like I would like to see how far we could go with this. Can we get Nathan Drake in there? Ratchet and Clank would be perfect for it.
PlayStation already has their fighting game like that.
Oh my, that never
PlayStation All Star. Yeah, it did. That it did happen. Happened. PlayStation All Stars did happen, and it was terrible.
It was pretty terrible. I can't lie about that. Maybe we get like a Call of Duty character in there because it's third party. You know, they could put like Ghost in there from. Wasn't he in one of those games? The guy with the skull on his mask.
Sure, and I've been confused with Ghost, the terrible Call of Duty game.
Although I don't know how that would work, considering they use guns and in Smash Brothers,
probably not well
fists. That might not be very well.
Probably not well. It'd be away from that family-friendly Nintendo thing. So, yeah. Let's not.
Let's get some Marvel characters in there, you know? Like, put the Hulk in there from Disney Infinity.
Oh, we can't. Marvel versus Capcom. We can't do that.
Hey, Capcom already gave them Ryu. That'll work.
All right. Well, they're going to have to talk to Marvel about that then. Or Disney. So, good luck with that.
Hey, anything's possible. Darth Vader was in Dead or Alive as well, wasn't he? So was Yoda.
He was in Soul Calibur. Both of them were in Soul Calibur. Yeah.
That's right. Sorry for hardcore fighting games out there. I didn't mean to get them confused. Let's see. They also talked about Legend of Zelda Twilight Princess HD Remaster, quote-unquote, because it's probably just going to be HD up-res. But, yeah, I suppose it comes out in March. What do you think about that? Would you be, if you had a Wii U, which obviously you don't, would you be tempted though to buy Twilight Princess in HD?
You know, I never got to play Twilight Princess when it came out on GameCube and Wii.
Yes.
I heard it was decent. It was a little dark for a Legend of Zelda game, but if I had a Wii U, I'd play it.
Really?
Yeah, okay. You know, I like the Zelda series, so I mean, it'd be interesting to play. It's one of the ones I've never gotten to play, really, so.
I agree with you. The only like little star I would put beside that is I want to see like how good is the HD remaster.
Yeah.
Because one of the things about Wind Waker that I never got a chance to play Wind Waker either, the HD remaster I don't think comes through as efficiently for that cartoony style of graphics. Not to say that the HD like remaster doesn't look pretty good, because I think it does. It certainly has its benefits from the GameCube version, but to me it doesn't seem to pop as the way that I want it to pop. So I would just say that I would like to see how good is that Twilight Princess HD remake before I spend money on it. So they also showed some other stuff. You know, they, I guess, a 13-second glimpse of Wii U Zelda. You know, the new one that's coming that they supposedly keep saying is for Wii U, but I have a feeling they're going to nix it to the NX, if you catch my drift there.
Yeah. Just like Twilight Princess.
Exactly. Well, Twilight Princess did come out for GameCube, yeah. But they were like, yeah, we're making a Wii version, mm-hmm. and that's going to be better. So hopefully that doesn't happen, because I really wanted that Zelda game on the Wii U, so I'm really... I've actually been recommending people to my friends not to buy a Wii U. I had some that were actually generally interested because the prices for those are coming down. And I was like, to be honest, they're talking about a new console next year. I would recommend against it. More than likely, their console will be backwards compatible, similar to how the Wii U is with the Wii. So I think you would be safe to say wait for the NX and then pick up one of these old games if it's backwards compatible, which, who knows? They may not be, because the damn tablet that they have forced every Wii U owner to purchase. So
yeah, the tablet.
Yeah, it's unfortunately not that great. There is a Wii U game getting ready to come out, Xenoblade Chronicles, I think, that I'm really interested in. There has been some good read-ups recently, because it's getting ready to come out in December, I don't know, 16th or something, maybe December 20th. It's not the early December, it's kind of in the middle of December, but I am interested in getting that game. But I want to see some more on it. It's hyper-Japanese, similar to like Phantasy Star Online, massive open world RPG. So apparently it's getting like, they're claiming it's bigger. Multiple news outlets are claiming it's got a bigger field of play, a bigger map than The Witcher, than Fallout, than Skyrim. However, what I have seen, while the actual space may be bigger, it doesn't quite look as alive. And I'd be careful to say, oh, it's because it's bigger, it's better. Well, I'd prefer quality over quantity. So just because it's a bigger environment don't necessarily mean that means it will be better than something like The Witcher or Fallout or Skyrim. But I thought that was interesting. That comes out sometime in December. I am curious about picking that up. But other than that, that was about all Nintendo had other than Star Fox. They did show they had some upgraded graphics. Did you see that, Troy?
Yeah, and did you also notice that it was also not gameplay footage?
Well, I was going to say, I didn't really notice the graphic difference. I was like, you know me, I normally notice graphics, and I'm sitting there like, what? Are the stars slightly brighter? I mean, is Earth a little bit more crisp? Maybe. I don't know. I wasn't really impressed with the, oh, look at our graphics change. But yeah, a lot of it was not in-game stuff.
Yeah. So. Oh, you're not going to mention the uproar that Nintendo fans got into, because... the Hyrule Warriors on the 3DS is going to add the female Link to it, Linkle.
Oh boy, no, I didn't even see that. I could totally see Nintendo fanboys going crazy over that.
Oh, did they blow up over nothing? Wow, it's amazing. But you know, I mean, considering that Link is so gender fluid, you really don't know exactly.
Sure.
So you know, people getting upset for no reason, but that's Nintendo fans, actually. I mean, I'm not say anything bad about Nintendo fans, but you guys are probably the first people to blow up about something that they don't like.
That's probably true. Anybody curious, Star Fox Zero comes out sometime in April that they released. That's their quote-unquote date. They don't actually have a firm date.
April 22nd.
Did they say April?
The 22nd of April.
Okay, cool.
Supposedly, maybe. It may get pushed back. You never know. You never know with Nintendo or any game company, really.
They also mentioned Bravely Second and Lair, which was the sequel to Bravely Default. It would be quarter one, 2016. That was a pretty good game, supposedly. I never got around to play it. I tried the demo, so technically I played it, and it didn't really... The demo's kind of like, hey, here's our game. Do whatever you want for like an hour. And it was a little bit overwhelming because it's not like the intro where they kind of introduce you to everything slowly. It's just kind of like, bloop, here you go, massive RPG on your handheld. Do whatever you want for an hour. And that was a little overwhelming. So I didn't play it for very long. But I hear it's very, very good, Bravely Default. For the 3DS, the sequel coming quarter one next year. All right, that's enough news. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of this week's VGCast. Troy.
I already know what the potatoes are.
What is at the top of your game queue?
Do you really have to ask that?
I do, because you have two big games on your plate. The meat and the potatoes. Which one's the meat?
Remember how I said I was going to play Fallout 4 last after I beat Tomb Raider? I lied. It's a lie. The cake is a lie, because Fallout 4 is so freaking addicting.
It's true.
I mean, don't get me wrong. Tomb Raider is great. It's heavy religious, though. It's got a lot of religious overtones to it. And it's not distracting. It's just like, okay, well, all right. And gameplay's solid. Looks great. One of the best looking games on the Xbox One. Hardly any stutter, really. Like, I really didn't notice any problems or any jankiness, per se.
Right.
Besides normal stuff, like, I mean, I've started to notice, I'm starting to become a graphic snob like you, but I've started to notice, like, when characters are sliding on a rope or something, their foot kind of clips through the rope, and Laura's is just the same. She'll clip through the rope a little bit. I'm like, I wish I didn't notice that, but I keep noticing it every time I see her slide down, like, climbing up a rope. Her foot's clipping through it. But it is definitely the potatoes of this meal of fall games, because, yeah, Fallout 4. For real.
It's like someone just came in and dropped an atom bomb on Lara Croft.
Yeah. Someone had a fat boy and launched a mini nuke at Lara Croft, and that was it. Cause,
someone sent a super mutant suicider. Right on November 10th. Let's do this. Let's kind of shelve Tomb Raider talk, because I unfortunately have not had a chance to play it. I do have some very basic impressions of it, because I watched my fiance start the game up and play through maybe the first 15 to 20 minutes, the part of which I had already seen through those videos that we talked about recently that Microsoft and Crystal Dynamics kept pumping out. Basically, the same video over and over again, about the first 27 minutes or so of the game. But I watched her play that first 15 to 20 minutes, and oh boy, does it ooze next-gen. You're right. It looks pretty. It seems like it plays pretty. It is Tomb Raider from 2 years ago all over again, but things just seem to be wildly improved. It looks great on Xbox One, and oh boy, does that audio track mixed wonderfully. Since I've had my 5.1 surround sound system, there have been numerous games as well as Blu-ray movies that I've booted up and go, man, just like the explosions are just a little too high. I know I can adjust the speakers, and I do, but it's like, you know, the explosions of this movie are a little too high. The dialogue in this movie is a little too low, and then the music tracks themselves in this game are a little too high, and the dialogue gets mixed in with the sound effects sometimes. God, Rise of the Tomb Raider is like perfect. I mean, tricking me sometimes to make me think people are behind me. Like, that game is solid with its audio track. It seems like the frame rate stays wonderfully stable. My fiance actually got to the part with the bear, and she was so engrossed in the game, partially because she's really terrified of bears in real life, but she got to this bear scene, and I kid you not, she's like shaking as soon as the bear is growling, because she kept dying over and over again. And every time she'd go back into this, I guess it's like a cave, she would start shaking. That's how much this game had her like engrossed in this area. So, yeah, I basically repeat everything you said. Like, it looks like it plays great. It looks great. It sounds great. But let's shelve that until I actually get a chance to play as well, because we'll be pretty busy next week. So I'm hoping within about 2 weeks from now, I'll be able to get to it, as well as yourself. You'll be able to have a chance to play it some more as well, right? Because you haven't beaten it or anything, true?
Yeah, I think I'm almost at the end. I think I'm maybe like 80% done, and then Fallout just took over.
Okay, well that's perfect then. That'll work out great. That way you'll have it under your belt, and hopefully I'll have it under my belt as well. We can talk about it next time. So let's go to the meat rather than the potatoes. Tell me about Fallout.
What do I need to tell you about Fallout?
How many hours have you put in so far, first of all? Do you know?
Okay, last time I checked, my save file was only at 14, which is surprisingly low, because it feels like I'm playing a lot longer than 14 hours. And it may be like 15 or so, but it feels really short. Like, I feel like I've been playing a lot more than my save data is telling me. Damn, this game.
Was this what you were expecting from playing Fallout 3? Because you wouldn't remember, I didn't really play Fallout 3. I played the first 10 minutes. So as a Fallout player yourself, was this what you were expecting?
Yeah. I mean,
yeah.
We've seen the beginning. We have seen the beginning of the game, basically, with, you know, you creating your character, you going into a vault. So all that was to be expected. It's when you finally get out the vault and you're exploring the wasteland and everything like that, it's when it really starts to hit you, and the game hits you pretty hard, and it keeps hitting you with how gorgeous it looks, the amazing soundtrack in the game. There are some problems with it. You know, it's a Bethesda game, so you should expect bugs. If you've played any Bethesda game, you should expect bugs, literally. Like, I don't think they've put out a Bethesda game without a single bug in it, so just expect them, and I expected them, and they're not taking away from the game too much. There are other things that are taking away from the game that I can tell you about, but the bugs don't bother me. This game just took away my wanting to play Tomb Raider. It's like every time I get off from work, it's like, okay, I'm at this part in Fallout. Okay, let me go do this, hunt down some more junk to upgrade stuff. And, you know, oh, there's that toy car. It's got screws. Let me get that. And oil, I need that too. It's so much.
I would like to add, full disclosure, you and I have both played this game on PC.
Yeah.
I have been made aware of numerous problems on both the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One versions of the game. Obviously, they run at a much lower frame rate than what the PC version is capable of. I'm not even capable of pushing a full 60 frames per second. Most of the time, I'm hovering around 45 in most areas, which is fine by me. This type of game, single player, I don't need it to be 60 frames per second. This one, I'm okay with it being less than that, just similar to how I had to deal with The Witcher as well as Batman. At the end of the day, I was okay playing Batman at 30, 35 frames per second, even though that game was broken. But yeah, Xbox One players, there's been reports of frame rate dropping to 0 frames per second at one point, elevators getting completely broken across the whole game on PlayStation as well as Xbox One. You know, things like texture pop in and things looking muddy, save game crashes on both of the consoles. Have you run into anything extreme like that? So let's say crashes or save game problems. Nope. I have not either.
It's like, PC, you finally won one after the disaster that was Batman.
Isn't that crazy? Not only Batman, but also Black Ops. Yeah. I mean, good on the list of games this past year. But I think it's really interesting now that we're seeing this kind of the other way. There are so many reports about how should Bethesda be let off the hook, like this keeps happening, like these games are so broken and blah blah blah, and like how can we be as gamers and fans be okay with this? And I'm over here on the PC like I haven't had one crash, not one glitch, like I got stuck in something by my own fault that I couldn't. I like accidentally fell in between a tree and the side of a building and a rock, and like I was stuck. I mean, that's not really Bethesda's fault that I fell down in there. Yeah. And I was able to, thankfully, on the PC, pop in a console command, which allows me to walk through objects. So I didn't have to like figure out how long ago my save was.
Yeah.
So that was really helpful. But like, man, it's so weird being on the other side of this finally, because you're right. With Arkham Knight, it's like, fuck, we got screwed again. Damn it, us PC players. But now we have like, this is like the perfect version. Maybe not perfect, because there are still problems, but this is definitely the better version than the console equivalents. And I think that's really cool to see this from the other way. It sucks for people who got it on the console and they're having issues. A lot of people are not having issues on the consoles, so it's not to say every version is bad. But yeah, there are definitely some issues to be raised, and I want to make that clear that we played it on PC. So if anybody out there is listening to this and is going, well, that's ridiculous, I run into a bug every 5 minutes. Well, maybe that's why, because you're playing on one of the consoles. Not that that's bad, it's just there are known problems with the console versions for this game, as has been the case in recent Bethesda games, like you mentioned earlier, Troy. Just about every game they develop, maybe not all the ones they publish, like Dishonored, for example, but most of the games they develop, yes, they all have problems.
Yeah, I mean, but I also want to make clear that, yeah, I'm hearing a lot of people complain about the Xbox One version more than the PS4 version, of course, because apparently Microsoft can't do anything good or something. But I have heard a lot more people say that they're not having as many problems as people are saying about the Xbox One. I guess it just seems like everybody wants to dogpile on Microsoft a little bit more because of just the things that Microsoft has done. And also because the machine isn't as good as the PS4. Not going to lie, isn't as good as the PS4. But it seems like the problems are falling on both systems pretty equally. And there has now been, this broke out today, there is now a game-breaking bug on all three, PS4, Xbox One, and PC. If you go to a certain area in the game will basically crash. So it's a game crashing bug, not a game breaking bug, but it's a game crashing bug. Hmm. I can't remember the name of it. It's like Monsoor or something like that. Yeah. So just something to watch out for, of course. But yeah, not. I haven't had a single crash. I haven't had any like save data corruptions or anything like that. I barely even notice any like super jankiness or anything. There is some points where it is, where like, you know, two factions are fighting against each other per se. Yeah, there will be some jankiness, but other than that, it's been running pretty smooth. Like you said, about floating around the 40, 45 frames per second for me.
What do you think so far about, say, the story, without spoiling anything? Have you had a chance to dive too deep into it? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm deep. I really don't know. I mean, I don't know what's... It's sad because I don't know which part is story and which part
and
is just side
quest.
That's
so beautiful about this.
Yeah.
That is what's so great. I don't either. I have a pretty good idea what is the main quest, but all the other side stuff, it feels important. It really does.
Yeah, I mean, well, some of that stuff doesn't seem important. I'm not going to lie. Some of it doesn't seem important at all, and then some of it does. It's like, I mean, everybody knows that the Brotherhood of Steel is in this game. Of course. Everybody knows that. But the way...
I didn't know that before I went.
No, well, you don't play Fallout, so...
I'm going to be honest. When I got these guys, I was like, who's the Brotherhood of whatever?
Yeah,
I don't really know. Who are you guys?
You don't
Why does
Fallout.
He have a power armor?
You don't play Fallout, so I understand. But there's a, I mean, I can't say anything now because, I don't know. It's just interest. That storyline alone is interesting. But there are some problems in this game. There are some things I really don't like about it. Especially like the beginning part of it. With a certain faction that we run into, the Minutemen.
Oh, yeah, you didn't like that part?
No, they're terrible.
Why?
I,
The Minutemen are terrible?
Yeah, I don't like it. I just don't like it. I don't like
being forced to kind of be following that role of being the good guy.
Well, I mean, you don't have to be forced. You just do it just to do it. I mean, the main problem I have with them, and it seems like other people have talked about this as well, is that after you save the Minutemen and they send you on a quest to go clear out an auto parts plant or a car manufacturing plant, it seems better to probably follow the actual story than to do that. Like, it seems like you're thrown into it if you follow the Minutemen quest line, like I said, which is at the beginning. You're thrown headfirst into it, where if you follow the actual story, it seems like you're eased into it a little bit more, and you're able to level up a little bit more than just going to do something that could possibly just cause you frustration if you haven't leveled up, or if you're not leveled up correctly. You know, it just seems like it caused more frustration. And plus, you get a chance to get more companions as well to liven up the gameplay a little bit, too, instead of just having dog meat.
Right.
Which, I mean, I'm not going to doubt dog meat. Dog meat's one of the best companions I've got in the game. But some of the other ones that we get are very, very helpful. But I think my main gripe with this game, to be honest with you, is the acting.
Voice acting in general?
The voice acting and the writing. Okay. Since you didn't play Fallout 3, you wouldn't know this, but Fallout 3, you had a little bit more leeway in what you said, and you got to see a lot more of what you were going to say instead of giving little snippets.
Very, very Mass Effect-like is what they have done.
Yeah.
Mass Effect, probably, I think all of them, actually. Mass Effect, it was always more of an emotional option as opposed to a direct line of text, as seen in KOTOR, for example, Knights of the Old Republic. So it looks like they definitely took a cue out of Mass Effect's BioWare's book. Are you saying that the Fallout 3 was more along the lines of something like KOTOR, perhaps?
Yeah, like, okay. if you chose an option, you definitely saw both, if not all of the dialogue, you saw most of the dialogue instead of sarcastic or maybe or yes.
I don't like
or no.
that either.
Well, the problem with this is that, you know, at least in Mass Effect and in Fallout 3, you can actually be a bad guy. You can be a renegade. You can be like, you know, punch people in the face before you do anything. Here, I've actually answered no before, and people just go ahead and do it anyway. Like, they'll go ahead and say, no, I'm going to tell you anyway. Like, I actually told Preston Garvey, the Minuteman leader, basically, you know, I told him no, just to see what would happen. Nothing different happened. He was like, oh, I'll just tell you anyway. You know, oh, will you take us to sanctuary? No. Oh, well, we'll go anyway. You know, it doesn't change anything.
I guess, only to play devil's advocate a little bit, if you take Mass Effect for an example, where it appeared as if you did have a choice.
Yeah, you're right.
At the end of the day, though,
you're right.
We all remember you didn't have a choice. You still had to progress. Progress through.
You had plenty of choices in Mass Effect too. I don't know what you're talking about. I'd like to tell deaths of many people.
I see what you're saying, though, because I feel like there were moments in Mass Effect, while the overarching story may not have progressed any differently, really, from whether or not you were Renegade or Paragon, as they called it, but at least there were moments in Mass Effect where, you know what, I don't like the way Rex looks in Mass Effect 1. I think he's an asshole alien. No, I'm not going to let him be a party member. You could do that for Garrus as well. There were people in that game that you didn't even have to take into your party, let alone talk to them.
Yeah.
And they would never be a part of your game from 1, 2, and 3 from that point on. And I see what you're saying with Fallout. It seems as if, regardless of what you say, almost everything is kind of locked in place. Whereas with Mass Effect, it kind of let you push on the walls a little bit, even though those walls might bend back. But it kind of lets you stretch out and feel like you are doing something that was your own, as opposed to following a script you have no control over. And I think that's kind of what you're alluding to. And I kind of agree. I don't like, number one, like you said, with the sarcasm being an option, a dialogue option. It's like, okay, but what is this sarcastic phrase going to be? I kind of want to know if it's like, you know, something really, really mean. I don't want to say it, but also, you know, yeah, I don't want to just be like, no, and then you say something really prudish or standoffish rather than just maybe I just really don't want to do this and I want to say it in a nice way, you know?
Yeah.
So I totally get what you're saying there. I will say, though, if you really wanted to be a renegade badass, you could, because fortunately, Fallout lets you target any player. I guess I shouldn't say player, any person, non-playable character, NPC that you want. You can target your dog. You can target Preston. You can target the settlement that you have. You can shoot them all with vats if you really wanted to.
Well, the problem with some of those is that they don't die.
True.
Preston won't die. Your dog won't die. None of your companions will die. But they can, I've heard this from other people, they can and will refuse to help you and will actually leave. They will not, you will not be able to choose them or find them. So if you continue to be a jerk and try and kill them and all that stuff. So I mean,
shoot them over and over repeatedly.
And I mean, you're right. I would like to, I don't want to see the full dialogue options, but I would like to see a little bit of what I'm going to say. It's like,
I agree.
Oh,
I agree.
Sarcastic. What am I going to be sarcastic about? Like, I mean, there are some things I don't want to be sarcastic about, you know, my son being missing. I don't want to be sarcastic about, but you give me a sarcastic answer about it. So, I mean,
right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Fallout. I mean, like I said, my main problem is the voice acting. They don't sound, it almost doesn't sound too convincing to me. For some people, for some of the people, it just seems like, you know, they're reading lines in a script, not showing a lot of emotion.
Yeah.
But,
which I would say that Bethesda kind of has a track record for that, going back to Skyrim and Oblivion.
Yeah.
Oblivion, I put 100 plus hours into. Skyrim, I put maybe 20 total over multiple plays. I tried to get in that game, I just couldn't. But that was one of my beef with those games, is they felt really lifeless. Except for Fallout, I would actually say they're okay. I wouldn't say this is Uncharted level, Mass Effect level, or even, you know, Assassin's Creed level. I think they do some pretty good voice acting in there as well. I would kind of agree, but also kind of disagree. To me, it's not bothersome, but I can definitely see where it's not good nor great. I just don't really notice it, I guess.
Yeah.
There was something else that you actually mentioned earlier that I wanted to touch on. You were talking about the quests, and you were talking about how you don't really know. I mean, you kind of know, but it's kind of vague. What are the real quests and what are the side quests?
Mm-hmm.
Curiously, in your quest log on your Pip-a-Boy, you go to the data tab and go to quest. Underneath that, if you notice, I don't know if you have, but if you noticed, none of it is broken into main quests or side quests like you might see in Dragon Age or The Witcher. Now, granted, you can highlight things and it'll pop them up on your map, but none of it is listed as main quest, parentheses, or side quests, _. It's all just one thing. So if you, the player, want to go to a mountain and do this quest for the ghoul people, then you can do that. Or you can go to this other city or this other vault if they have those. I haven't found one yet. So they have this long quest log that builds up, that there's no distinction between what types of quests these are. They're just there, and you just have to kind of pick and choose what you want to do. I think that's really impressive. And I like that for the most part. The completionist in me kind of wishes, like, damn, I wish I could just organize this as main quests and side quests. But I like the immersion of it. And there's one little beef that I had with a lot of people pushing back on this game. And that's, they felt like there wasn't enough meat, I guess we could say, in the beginning, the opening of this game. I heard a lot of reviewers and journalists. Even though they gave it good scores at the end of the day, what I kept hearing is that, you know, you're put into this world, you the player don't really care about your kid, you the player don't care about your wife, yet you see this stuff that happens in the beginning of the game when you go to get to the vault. You're brought out into the world, you're just kind of thrown into it, they don't really give you any sense of direction and this and that, and you're just kind of stumbling along your way. But the whole time I'm thinking, isn't that what Fallout should be? I mean, the story is, you're in a world that you know, and you are literally transported through time to another world that is completely different and new to you. Of course your character would be stumbling around, not have any real direction. I kind of appreciated that. I felt like that was a great thing to have. I didn't want to have this, you know, giant line on the ground that told me you have to go here and there's no other way that you can go. I kind of respected that the game seemed to just open up for me immediately rather than enclose me for 3 hours to get me through a tutorial to tell me about the world. I actually really appreciate that. As someone who has not really experienced Fallout before, I really enjoyed that. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I do understand where people are coming from saying that, you know, Fallout 3 did have a little bit more substantial beginning, letting you basically create your character in steps. Whereas in this one, you're thrown into it by creating your guy or girl. Let's get that out of the way. You can create a guy or a girl, both fully voiced. Go through, do your special stuff, and it's pretty much it. You do your special, and then you're thrown into the vault, basically. Which I've also heard that if you don't make it to the vault, something happens. Like, you can actually not make it to the vault at the beginning of the game. But I'm like, I don't want to go back and try and make a new game and figure what's going to happen, because there's no YouTube videos or anything out there yet of it. So I'm like, I want to see, but I don't want to see. I'm with you. I do like that. Okay, well, I didn't have to spend, you know, 30 minutes to 45 minutes in a vault trying to learn how to shoot and all this other stuff. You know, I didn't have to make my character while I'm going through childhood, basically. It's like, boom, I made my character. Boom, you're in the vault. Go through the vault, and you're out. You know, you get a sense of what happened. You know, you have your main quest, basically. Find out what happened to your son. Try and find what happened to your son, basically. So, I don't know if there's anybody that's complaining that it was just a son and not a daughter or anything like that, or, you know, but
I can see where people would be a little upset, especially if they had played Fallout, because I assume that's how Fallout handled your character creation. You kind of slowly progress to the stages of developing your character.
Yeah.
So I can see where they're coming from. But with this story, I haven't really learned the backstory of my main character. I don't know if I ever will, but it seems like I was just your typical dad, husband person. And all of a sudden this nuclear war is happening and I'm rushed into a vault that I just moments ago signed up for. And I'm put inside and I put this vest on. Shit happens. I wake up from cryo sleep. And I find a Pip-Boy and I put it on. Well, of course, there's not going to be this massive long tutorial. And so when I get out in the world, I'm like, well, how the hell do I use this? And it's like, that's what the character would have been thinking were this an actual real world. How do I use the VAT system? How does this work? And as a first-time Fallout player, I can totally see where hardcore Fallout fans would be on the other fence than this. But for me, being my first time, really, this was like this really interesting learning experience that I felt connected to the character who was also learning these things for the, I assume, first time as well. Also, you know, learning to shoot, how to interact with objects, you know, what not to eat, what to eat, things with high rads, stay away from those, you know, cooking your food. I don't know if any was that in the old games, but to me, that was really interesting to learn all of those things that you had to do. The world itself is pretty vibrant. I had a big problem with Fallout 3. I never really made it to the outside, but all the pictures, I was really worried about that. Mm-hmm. It had this deep, kind of dark, lime green almost. I'm partially colorblind, so it's hard for me to describe green, which I assume is what the colors were. A yellowish wasteland, whereas this game, it's a bright blue sky. You see the moon at times. You see all these beautiful stars. They have all these trees everywhere. Granted, they're all dead. But there's trees everywhere. There's burn-up cars that are red, and they're yellow, and they're blue, and they're popping, and there's buildings over here, and rivers, and there's some bear-type creatures. They're not really bears. They're, like, mutated, and two-headed cows, and it just goes on, and there's highways, and it's really, really beautiful. I will say the world doesn't seem as large. You're kind of squared off, literally, very early in the game. The map is big, don't get me wrong, but I wouldn't say it's quite Witcher size, maybe. I wouldn't say it's quite Skyrim size either. It does feel just a touch constrained once you kind of start feeling your way around the world. But man, it does make up for it. Almost everywhere you go, there is a story to be told. Whether or not that story is laid out in a quest line or a dialogue option, or whether it's just laid out in how the environment is designed. You know, if you go into, I remember going into an area, I think it was a factory, and the factory was kind of a quest, but I get down to the, like the bottom of the factory, and these guys, these raiders, were working on a cave. They were trying to get material out of a cave, and there's a computer with a terminal on it. I totally ignored the terminal and was like, well, screw it. I'm going to go down this cave. I got to see what's down here before I leave. So I start going down this cave, and all of a sudden I get into like almost a dream sequence, and everything changes, and there's, oh my God, there's all these people, and there's these candles, and then boom, it flashes out, and there's dead ghoul bodies all over the place. And all of a sudden I knew what was about to happen. The ghouls are going to wake up. So I fight through them. It was almost a disaster. Get through that. Another dream sequence happens. All the lights come on in this place. There's people walking around, and then everything just falls apart again, and the lights go almost completely dark. Now the ghouls get up, and they have real names. They're real people's names. And from what I gathered with the dream sequences, it looked like some sort of human sacrifice thing going on. Mm-hmm. But this was no quest line. This was all just right here. This was some side part of this side area of this world that I got to discover, and that made it really rewarding to see something like that. To know that there could be something like that around almost any corner is almost priceless for a game like this. I can't stress enough how wonderful that element of a game like this is. It's really rewarding to know that there could be a big payoff, you know, in terms of your story, in terms of quests, in terms of world building, almost at any corner in this game. And I really do enjoy that.
Yeah, I love the randomness of this game. 1 minute you're walking through, you know, particularly sunny day for a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and then the next minute a radiation storm kicks up.
Yes! Oh my God, that was so cool. Oh, I've had it multiple times.
A couple times, and every time it happens, I like, okay, where's the closest indoor building I can go to? Because I'm not sitting out here in the radiation right now, so... I'll just go into a building, and if it's clear enough, I'll find a bed and sleep for a couple hours, and then get back up, and the radiation storm's over. It is interesting to see whenever you're just out there, and it's like, oh man, it's like nothing but green, you know, or maybe you don't see it, but it is very interesting to see that the random fights that kick off between raiders and super mutants, or super mutants and synths, or just, you know, the random stuff that happens in towns and settlements and stuff. Like, I actually had a moment when I went to Diamond City, if you made it that far.
I did.
Where a person's being accused of being a synth, and they gunned down one of the people.
Oh my God, wasn't that crazy?
Yeah, it was like, what did I just walk into? But first off, let me steal all this stuff first before, you know, while you guys are talking.
Yeah, there's more moments like that just in Diamond City alone. There's a part where you go into a bar, and I don't know if you experienced this, but there's a guy yelling at the bartender, and you learn through the course of their yelling and eventually they're fighting. There's something going on with this bartender, this guy, and a woman sitting at the bar. And it's like, I just stumbled in there just to see what was up at this bar because I heard rich people being snooty. So I decided to go up there, and this was what I was treated to. I was like, oh my God, this is really impressive. So there's, I think a lot of, they do the little things very well, in my opinion. Even that radiation storm you're talking about, it's not like some other games where all of a sudden, boom, there's a storm and now it's raining in your head. No. You can hear it coming. And then all of a sudden you see the clouds and you see the light get dimmer and it changes to green and you get the thunder gets louder and it feels like it's coming closer to you. And then boom, it's on top of you. And obviously that's designed to give the player enough time to get out of it because it is a storm that will affect you physically. It will hurt your character. But which is interesting. I never thought to actually sleep during the storm. I was getting pretty freaked out the first time because I ran into my prefab built structure in Sanctuary Hills, the place that you first acquire in order to start building things. I built the largest prefab you could build there because I wanted just an easy house real quick in case all this crazy stuff happened in my imagination, but of course it did not. But I got in there and I was like chilling in my little house and I was still getting radiation damage. I was like, what is wrong with my house? I can't figure this out. So I started putting doors in everything. I started trying to cover up all the cracks. And I assumed later, I was like, maybe I should have just slept, and you just kind of reaffirmed that.
Yeah, I mean, as long as you're, which you're, you know, the radiation damage that you take can will lessen and will stop for a second before it starts going again. As long as you just try and sleep before you start taking radiation damage, you should be good. Like I said, it only takes a couple hours for it to clear up. So, like, pop in for 3 hours and then pop back out, and you should be, the radiation storm should have passed by then. Let's see.
Vats or no vats?
Well, okay. I gotta ask, do you like the vet system for this right now? Like, do you enjoy it?
Because it was
different in Fallout 3.
Number one, I can only come at this from Fallout 4's perspective, obviously, because you know I didn't make it past being a kid.
I just want to make sure.
This game has me a bit conflicted on the controls, which leaves me to being conflicted on VATS versus first person. From what I understand, this game is much more an FPS than the previous Fallout game. So playing on a PC with a mouse and controller, which I have a Razer mouse and a Razer keyboard, so I have good gaming PC peripherals. I do enjoy not using the VATS and shooting people. Having said that, though, I really enjoy playing with the controller because the building aspect of this game is utter dog shit, and it is not made for mouse and keyboard peripheral use for that input device. It's not made for that. It's made for the controller. Mm-hmm. So having to bounce back and forth, which, by the way, does not do on the fly, really gets me frustrated. So when you ask me VATS or the first-person element, I do really prefer the first-person element because I think it's pretty good. But the fact that I usually default to my controller because I like to build things because I love Minecraft, I find myself there's no auto-aim in this game like Call of Duty might have or Halo might have when you play with a controller where it snaps to the enemy.
Yeah.
You have to rely on either your skill with the sticks or the mouse 100% or use the VAT system. So when I default to the controller, I do tend to resort to the VAT system even though I always feel like I'm doing something wrong. I don't understand what it is. I just feel like I cannot be that far away from people, even with a sniper rifle or a rifle. And I just hate leaving my shots up to chance. Like, it's such a... I feel like in the 60s and 70s, I miss all the time, even though I should be much higher chance than that. So.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, if you notice in VATS, they still move. So slightly, they still move. In Fallout 3, they didn't move. At all. Once you hit that, they wouldn't move at all. Like, they'd freeze in place, basically.
So it almost turns into like a turn-based strategy game, kind of. Right, not quite that hardcore.
Yeah, but it made VATS more useful in Fallout 3 than it is in Fallout 4. I'd rather free aim than to go with VATS most of the time. You know, I go with VATS when it's close. When it's like 20 meters
when you away. Know you can guarantee a hit, pretty much, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, either go for a body shot if I got a weapon powerful enough that it's going to take him down like two body shots, or, you know, if the headshot's like about 70-75%, I'll try it. But 9 times out of 10, you're better off crouching down, putting up your aim, and aiming for a headshot, and you'll almost hit it 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're fighting. So, I mean, sometimes headshots don't even work. But, you're better off doing that than you are with VATS, for the most part. Because VATS just seems to be... It just doesn't seem to be as reliable as it was before. And there are ways... There are ways of getting it up, but it just doesn't seem to help it as much as it used to.
Right.
Because in the old game, if you had perception high enough, you know, VATS you'd almost be unstoppable in VATS.
Yeah, I don't know if perception is linked to it, because I actually have a pretty high perception.
I think it still is. I think it actually still is perception, let's stop the VATS talk for a second and talk about the perk system. How do you like that? Like, how do you like the setup of the choosing your perks and all that?
I I like it, mm-hmm. but I can see where hardcore fans of the Fallout series of the past would not be as enthused about it. Yeah. I personally like it because I feel like I'm not quite as restricted in terms of my personal progression mm-hmm. as I would be in a RPG of 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. So 15 years ago, you might have to get these 5 base powers. And then after you get those, you get 7 different advanced powers. And then after those, you pick 4. You get a super advanced set of 6 powers that you can only pick 2 of. And you go down these skill trees, per se, kind of like WoW. And you don't really have access to everything in the beginning. Whereas what I like about this perk system, as long as you're buffing up those individual categories like strength or perception and charisma, you can kind of almost pick where you want. There are limitations here and there where, you know, you have to have level 25 strength or something like that. But I do like how there's this long page of, you know, I can go to row 6 and pick something up, or row 1, or I can go all the way over here. I do kind of like that, and I think the little cartoon animations are hilarious at times.
Yeah, no, they're good. I like the animations for it.
But I do kind of see where, you know, I played RPGs for a long time, and The Witcher is very similar to this that I'm describing. Mm-hmm. You know, so I totally see how people of this, especially fans of the series, would be like, "Whoa, what the hell is this?" So I only have my perspective on it on Fallout 4, and I'm okay with it. I don't think there's anything really wrong with it, but I can totally see how people would want a more traditional approach, and that would be frustrating to them. So what about you? What do you think of
it? I mean, aesthetically, it's not that pleasing to me. I mean, it'd be great as a poster, which some people did get as a poster when they got the physical copy of the game. But trying to figure out everything like that, it's like you're showing me way too much. It seems like you're showing me way too much, so my choices are... I'm trying to narrow it down, but it's not narrowing down for me.
You know? I can see that, yeah.
It's like, I like you said, I'd rather have the, choose one of these 5 or 2 of these 5 or whatever and just keep going from there. Right here, it's like, you have a choice of everything depending on how you know, split up your special. You can almost hit like all the way at the bottom if you want it to, early levels. I mean,
and it doesn't really help that every tutorial in their game is about 3 words or sentences max.
Is there a tutorial? Is there?
Yeah, exactly. You know, you get to the building stage and it's build something with electricity. Boom, that's it. You get to the perk system and it's like, this is your perk system. Bye. And that's it. And I felt like that was really odd personally for most of it. I thought it was interesting because I felt like I was alone, like the character was, and I had to figure stuff out on my own. But especially for things like the perk system and the build system, which are fairly complex, I was expecting them to be like, hey, this is the 3 roads you can access for now. Down here are advanced roads. But no, it's like, here you go. So I can totally see how it's overwhelming, because it is, in a way, even for me, overwhelming. So totally agree on that part.
And then the building.
Do you want to talk about that for a second?
Yeah, let's talk about how terrible it is.
How many settlements have you built?
Like 2.
Like 2?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to have that much of a point to it, honestly. Like,
yeah.
Besides, you technically have to build Sanctuary. Technically. You don't have to make Sanctuary your main base, but... You know, you have Sanctuary, you have that red rocket that you run into. There are other places that you can make as a Sanctuary. And that's what most of the Minutemen stuff is that you're clearing stuff out to make that a settlement, which means you have to micromanage that settlement if you really want to. They don't have any defense. Oh, they're unhappy. Add some water, add some food, add like
very Farmville.
Yeah, pretty much. And it's like, all right, I don't mind doing it for the main settlement I go to. Like, whenever I send a companion back, they're going back to Sanctuary. I don't even bother sending them to the other places. Now, I did recently unlock a new place that I might start building up. Because
Castle?
No, I haven't gotten that yet. That's like, what? That's one of the last Minutemen quests, I think.
I hope so.
You hope so. No, it's the Boston Airport, I believe.
Okay, I haven't got that far.
Yeah, you'll get it. You'll actually get it through story. I believe.
Okay.
I think it's story. It might be side quest. Who knows? The building and the management of your junk. I do not like that because, you know, when you're building stuff, you need materials, right?
Yes.
And I don't like that there's no taking the stuff out of what you're holding and breaking it down. Or at least I haven't figured that out yet.
Oh, so you're talking like if you find a...
Like a globe.
A ceiling fan. A globe or magnifying glass or light bulb.
The only way you can break that down is if you drop it and then go into build mode, it seems like. I don't think there's a way that you can like scroll through your junk and go, okay, hit the X button to scrap it. Like your guns and your armor and stuff.
Ha! Can I just point out LOL because you said press X to scrap your junk? That sounded funny. anyway, I think what they were going for, I don't think you're supposed to scrap all of the random junk that you find. I think if you find a desk fan, if you put your cursor or if you put it in your inventory and you go over it, it'll tell you in the middle that, oh, the desk fan gives you 3 aluminum and 2 plastic. I think it just automatically counts that. I don't think you actually have to scrap the items. Yes.
Because I'm not sure. Because
I'm counting on the Pip-Boy app, 7 sanctuaries or 7 areas. All of them have like 7 to 10 people in them, 40 to 50 defense. So I'm not bragging. I'm just saying like I've done a lot of the building. In fact, most of my 30 plus hours has been in building and I have not scrapped any of the junk, not because, I didn't know to do it or because I was told not to do it or something like that. I don't think I have to. I never thought I need to go scrap the fans and the pots and the, you know, globes that I found. I just assumed that it was picking that up. So, I mean, there may be a way to do it, but I don't think you actually have to scrap them into individual chunks.
Okay, well, what I was going to ask is, okay, when you're doing that, do you move that junk to your, like, your workshop, or are you doing it for, okay. So that may be it. That may be it. If you move it to the workshop, then it automatically breaks it down when you're actually building stuff.
Now, those items will stay together, though, in the workshop transfer box. So if you transfer over 10 globes, you know, 4 telephone booths or whatever, and 4 light bulbs, they'll stay that way in your workshop unless you spend them, obviously, in building a tower or something like that, they'll disappear. But if you don't spend them, they'll stay that way. They don't actually break down.
Yeah.
So
yeah, no, I get that. Okay. Yeah. So that's probably what's going on is where I'm like, I guess I'm not moving the stuff that I want to move over to the workshop. So that's why it seems like I don't have a lot. I'm going to try that out as soon as I can, I guess, because at first I was just dropping all the stuff and then going into build mode and then just breaking it down from there.
Yeah.
Which I don't think it's a little aggravating.
Yes, I can see how that would be. And you obviously know that you can inside the green glowing wall that tells you where you can build stuff. Obviously you can scrap all the tires, old cars, basically everything in the world, right?
Pretty much. You can even scrap some of the older broken down buildings that you can't go into.
Yeah, even the trees. You can scrap the trees.
Trees for wood, cars for steel.
Yes. Okay, so cool. So the only part that it was a little confusing then was the junk part. There is a perk, I think it's called Local Leader, that allows you to then set up supply lines in between your workshops to the other establishments that you have, thus allowing you to have a global inventory for all those places. So if you have, like I said, 7 or 8 establishments like I do, most of them now I have supply lines linked to them, which you just command one settler to go to the next place. You can pick which one you want him to go to. And he'll then, almost within about 60 seconds, all of your items, all of your junk will be available at that other establishment. And so if you have 100 steel at the first place and you had none at the other, without Local Leader perk, you wouldn't have that steel over there. But once you get that Local Leader perk and set up those supply lines, then you are allowed to globally share that inventory as long as they're connected with a supply line. So
yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Something to think about as well. Cause that was, when reading the reviews, everyone kept talking about how you had a global inventory like that, but no one explained how you actually did it. So when I got into starting building things and had multiple areas, I was like, why don't I have steel? I have it over there. It's not working. And I found out because you have to do the perk system. So that's another thing I would give a shot as well. But yeah, I don't think you have to actually scrap all of the individual junk that you find. In fact, looking at the Pip-Boy app right now, which we're going to talk about in a second, if you go to your inventory and your junk, and I don't know if you actually have anything in there. I only have two items because I try to drop it off at the workshop as much as possible because that stuff has weight.
Yeah.
But I do have a fuse and a military-grade circuit board. The circuit board, for example, right to the right says circuitry 5, and the fuse says copper and glass as well, just one a piece. So I think it automatically counts that, and if you click component view, you can kind of see how it's broken up. But I think it automatically counts it as long as you put it in your workshop. Other than that, I'm not really sure, so... That might help, but yeah. You are totally right in the fact that the whole layout and UI of, that means user interface, children, the UI of the building mechanic, oh my gosh, it is so rough. I don't understand. Like, they were developing this game. These are guys who built this whole game. They built multiple games, and this is the best that they could come up with? Holy cow. It's rough, man. Oh, I was having a conversation with a buddy of mine the other day. He was talking about, oh, man, you got to use a mouse and keyboard. I was like, I do like using the mouse and keyboard, man, but the building system, it's not built for a mouse and keyboard. It's built for a controller. And even then, it's not very good. It's rough.
It's rough. It is. Yeah.
And it's not just the item layouts. And what we're talking about is, you know, the very first menu you're presented with, it's just a little bar at the bottom that has maybe 4 or 5 items, but it's not really descriptive on what all could be in there. So if you want to build X, well, which one is it in? I'm not really sure. Some of the things like fences are only in the wood category. They're not in the steel category, but yet the steel category does have some certain types of walls. And then the lighting category, you have other decorations that maybe you don't really suspect should be in there. It's all broken down very strangely. And then there's no search item. So you would think you could at least search with the technology we have of 2015. That's not in there. And then, in addition to the clunkiness of the actual user interface of laying things down, boy, oh boy, does it get rough placing items in a straight line. Good God. I don't know if you've tried that yet. This is why I built a prefab house, which is one of the items that you can build that is already a put-together house. It's only one. You only have really like 2 templates. But I was trying to build my own house. After like 10 minutes, I was like, this is ridiculous. I can't build a straight line to save my life, even though the items snap together. They just don't snap straight. It's super frustrating.
Oh, it's bad.
Super fresh.
Also, let's see. What else? Love how the floors are only in the wood section.
Exactly.
You can't have any metal floors at all. Unless you do a prefab, which has metal floors for some reason.
And then the wall with the doorway in it, you can't attach a floor to it once you put that one up. It's like, well, then what's going to connect to the door? How are people going to get up to the freaking door if there's no floor? Oh, man.
It gets better with the freaking prefab wooden large structure. There's like a section where it looks like a door can go in, but you can't put a door there.
You're trying to build a shelter for these people you want to keep safe.
There's plenty of
from
holes.
From bandits or radiation. Yeah. The holes in the windows, but that one fake door that you're talking about, I must have spent 30 minutes trying to put something over that, thinking, I can't leave this open. Someone could just walk in and murder the children or something. Oh, my God.
That or radiation sickness from radiation storms or whatever. It's like, no, none of that even matters. You can't even do anything about it.
Let's not even begin to conversate on the electricity running mechanism.
Oh, attach holy wire cow to section B, and you know you're good. That's pretty much it.
It's crazy. I thought Minecraft Redstone was hard. No. This Fallout electricity thing is just ridiculous. And plus, there's no tutorial. What? It's not that hard? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's not that hard.
Oh, it's pretty.
Put a generator down, and then you just feed the wire to whatever is going to electricity, and that's it.
Yeah, but then if you want to add multiple things, you have to add 2 different types of towers. Plus, there's towers that have relay switches on them in case, for some reason, you wanted to walk out in the middle of the night and go, I'm going to turn the entire block of power off with a switch.
They did that for the people that love to build with Redstone. Like, Literally, that's the only people that are going to find enjoyment for this stuff where it's like, oh, I want to put a terminal here that's going to, you know, do this or be able to
light
do
up
all
a
this,
sign,
you know,
that has a penguin on it or something. Yeah, with the, they have these little LED light boxes that
yeah,
you can
I've
build
seen
whatever
people
you want.
Do some settlement bills. They have one. I saw one person that had a sanctuary sign that said sanctuary just lighting up, basically. Well,
the parts that I'm talking about being frustrated with is, like you said, you build a generator. Mm-hmm. You want to run wire. If you have one light, well, it's a no-brainer. You run the wire to the one light. You're good to go. Now, if you want to put multiple lights in your home, your structure, your prefab, for instance, well, now you have to get a little bit more creative, right? You can run a few multiple wires to a few different things, but then you got wires going all around the place. So you want to run one wire to one spot that powers the whole building. The problem is that in order to attach wire to the building, you have to have some sort of adapter or connector. The game doesn't really tell you what is supposed to be the adapter or the connector. They just give you, here's a small tower that you can kind of conveniently place right next to a building that will kind of give the building power, even though you're not even connected to it, which it will do that. Or you can put these little, they look like metal probes, I guess, that can attach either down, sideways, or straight up on your building. The problem is when you hook those up, they're always on. The power is always going to whatever is attached to that area. And secondly, you don't know what the surface footage for that coverage is going to be. So is it the one right corner of your house? Is it the entire house? Is it the second floor? Is it the first floor? It's kind of like place it and guess. And that's really where the problems break down with me. And then you run into all kinds of issues with, is the wire running properly? Well, now it's glitching through the side of the door, and I want to put a switch here, but how do I get the switch? The switch is the size of my dog. Like, how does this even go on a wall? So
then it becomes an aesthetic issue for people like you.
Exactly. Exactly.
I can understand hours. That.
And hours.
But, and hours. I mean, here's a simple solution. Just don't run power to a house. Just don't.
I have to, man.
Just don't bother. Just
listen, I was spent 30 minutes freaking out about the imaginary children, which we don't have in my settlement, trying to get a door on the side of this freaking prefab. So, of course, I'm like, this room is the bedroom, so it has to have a fan. This room is the watchtower, so we can have normal lights, and they can stay on 24/7, so they don't need a switch. But we need a switch down in the first floor room, plus I need a TV, a couch, and end tables. That's really – I'm playing The Sims in Fallout is what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, it's going to be helpful to get that benevolent leader freaking achievement if you're going to be achievement hunting in this game. Which I hear is really, really tough because you got to get a settlement up to 100% happiness.
Yeah.
I mean, I only think that you only need power for a couple things. You only need power for traps if you're going to have them. You don't need to run power to most of your turrets. Some of your the laser turrets need power. So, I mean, if you're going to do that, that's fine. And your major, like, water distribution ones, you'll have to run power to that.
That's right.
And a siren for attacks. And that's pretty much it. I mean,
distress beacon. Oh, no, I'm sorry.
Oh, the radio beacon, too, to get more.
Yeah, the radio beacon to get to track more settlements. That's one.
But I mean, other than that, it's not much that you really need power for. It's just, you know, if you're really into that building thing, then yes, you're going to need power for a lot of things. But
yes, I have, if anybody's wondering for Sanctuary, I have maybe 2 to 3 large power towers, I guess you could say. I have 2 or 3 of those nearby almost every single house. Now, obviously not one right next to each other, but spaced out accordingly so that I can run power throughout almost the entire neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's that's how I do it. But yeah, Troy's right. There's not a whole lot that you absolutely have to have power to. It's really for more of a aesthetic reason. Now, the castle I mentioned earlier, there's something inside there that you have to have 2, I think, medium power. I guess you don't have to have 2. You have to have a handful of the smaller ones, though. But yeah, for the most part, you don't have to have power for most of the turrets, and really the heavy turret is the most important one. And I only say that because it's cheap, you don't really need power for it, and it gets the job done pretty well. So, but yeah, you don't really have to have power if anybody out there is playing. But in my mind, it's like, well, my settlers need fans, and they need radios running, a Diamond City radio, and it gets pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Not going to lie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can understand it. I can understand getting swamped with the building and all that stuff. But, I mean, half the time I don't even bother going back to my settlements too often.
Mm-hmm.
Out there wandering the wastelands, just me and Piper or me and Dogmeat, you know. not Cogsworth, because Cogsworth is worthless, but
God, he's so worthless.
Again, what's with a nurse, a maid or butler with a saw blade watching my child? I have no idea. I don't understand it, but okay.
He's got the flame coming out of his butthole.
Yep.
And it's like flying around my kid. What the hell?
Exactly. Doesn't make any sense.
Hey, speaking of the kid, was your kid a different race than your character?
No, I mean, I guess
mine was.
I guess it took more from the character I'm playing, I guess, because and I told my girlfriend this. I'm like, I'm glad I didn't make you in this game as close as I could, because they don't take any prisoners with the spouse at all in this game. But because she's white and I'm black, and character and the baby came out black. So I was like, guess it took more of mine. But
I made my character white, and my white wife I just left alone, and my fiance is sitting with me watching me play the opening, 30 minutes or so of this game, and we get to that point where it's like, my baby is definitely dark skinned. Not that I have a problem with anyone being dark skinned, but I was looking at that baby like, I don't think this is mine. It's like playing with your son, and I'm like,
your game right there.
I was like, I don't know. Brittany was like, well, maybe he's just, like, the game's like graphics are bad, like the shadows are bad. And I was like, I don't know, maybe. But and then I heard on some other podcasts, people were actually talking about that was kind of a big thing, that it's some people who created a black character, their child was way more light skinned, and some people who created a white character, the child was way more. I feel like that may have been like a troll move on Bethesda or something. I was looking at my kid like, I don't think this is mine. This is really strange. All of a sudden, nukes.
There is a troll move in Bethesda, and that is the naming process.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I've had a lot of complaints. I've had a complaint from my friend Kyle, who's been playing the game, and I have a complaint. How come Kyle and Troy aren't one of the names that that Cogsworth can say?
Hey, neither is Brad. Fucking Bradley is, but not Brad.
Yeah, Kylie's up there. And now Bradley's up there. He'll say Yojimbo,
Boobies. He'll say boobies. Come on.
But common names apparently don't work. So what? I mean, seriously, do we have to download a mod to give more names for this game or something? they're going to provide this. They're going to update the game or something. I mean, I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense.
Oh my God. Can you see that now? $2.99 DLC?
No, because they wouldn't do that. They'd do it for free.
What? They wouldn't do that?
They'd do it for free. Bethesda would probably do that for free. They probably wouldn't charge anybody to get their name being said in the game, because a lot of people probably wouldn't even bother paying for it. Because, I mean, the only people that it really matters with is Cogsworth.
Horse armor.
Yeah. And horse armor. They've learned their lesson from horse armor. But I think Cogsworth is the only one that actually says your name. So, I mean, if you don't carry him, if you don't have him along, it doesn't matter.
That's true.
So, but it was annoying to create your character and expecting him to say your name, but it's like, oh, Mr. or Sir. And that's it. No actual name, nothing. You're just Sir. So, but I mean, all in all, Fallout 4 is, I'm thinking it's exactly what people thought it was going to be. It is the return of the Fallout series from Fallout 3 to Fallout 4, because a lot of people didn't like New Vegas. It's pretty. It plays well. It has its bugs, but it's still pretty good. It's a definite game that you'll come back to play again. And make different character builds, which I forgot to ask. What kind of character are you playing as anyway? Like, what did you focus on?
I have no idea.
I have no idea. That's a terrific answer.
If I look at my special,
you're just a jack of all trades.
For anybody out there who's not sure what we keep talking about, special stands for strength, perception, endurance, charisma, intelligence, agility, and luck. Kind of curious. Has that always been the case for all hardcore D&D RPGs, really? Because I feel like that's always the stats, right? Perception, strength, endurance, and they just were like, oh my god, a spell special? No. I have 7 in strength, 7 in perception, 7 in endurance, 9 in charisma. I found a few pit boys, so that's why some of this is a little higher. 1 in agility, 5 in intelligence, and 4 in luck.
Wow.
So I don't know what that, means. One, what does agility do? The number of action points in VATS. Maybe that's why VATS sucks for me, because I only get like one shot with every gun.
Oh, God, if you just got 1 point in agility, I'm surprised you're even doing anything, because in VATS, it's like, you can't sprint, you can barely use VATS.
Oh, so what you're saying is I should probably put some points in agility, huh?
You might want to put some points in agility, and, you know, like I said, it helps if you're sprinting, because your sprinting uses action points, so the more action points you got, the longer you can sprint.
I'm going to ask you about your stats, because I'm curious how you stacked yours. But I remember my logic here, and I know for all these D&D style role playing games that have these stats in it, charisma. I guess in this game, that's what it's called in this game. But other games, it could be called something else. But basically, the stat that always handles persuade, and in Mass Effect and KOTOR, you go down the list. That stat usually is important to me because I like to coerce people into doing things that I want them to do, to barter for better items, for influencing people the way I want to influence them. So I was trying to boost that up. So when I started boosting that up in this game, I was like, well, strength probably wouldn't be a good complement to that. I don't really know what a luck and agility do. I don't really know what VATS does. But then I got to perception and I saw accuracy and I was like, well, I know VATS is some form of auto shooting thing. So I want the accuracy to be as high as I possibly can in the beginning. So I think I boosted perception and charisma higher, and I found pit boy stuff for endurance and pit boy stuff for strength. But agility has yet to be touched. So,
well,
I didn't know, because it doesn't say, I'm reading agility right now.
Mm-hmm.
It measures your overall finesse and reflexes and your ability to sneak, but it doesn't say anything about sprinting. So I had no idea.
Like I said, with your action points, it takes action points to sprint. So
if
you don't have a lot of action points, you're not sprinting very far.
Exactly, which I don't.
I wish I could tell you exactly what my build is, because I don't have my freaking app linked yet, so I forgot to link it. But because that's how you're looking at yours without me starting up the game. Which if I start exactly. it up, I'm not going to talk anymore. I went a little even with it. I did boost strength a little bit because I want to carry a lot more stuff.
That's smart.
Yeah, because, I mean, 9 times out of 10, you're carrying a lot of different things. And your companions are good for that, too. Especially your stronger ones, which you'll get sometimes later. Some of the ones that are a little bit stronger than others. Like, I don't think dog meat can carry as much as some of the other ones. But there are some that can carry a lot more stuff than you can. That are like almost power armor level strength, which power armor levels you to level 11 strength. But yeah. Let's see. I pumped a lot in the perception strength. Let's see, intelligence, and I kind of kept my. I put like a 4 in agility, but I kept my luck and my. Luck and endurance a little bit down, and charisma, I got it about 5 or so, I think.
Okay,
maybe a little bit more, because, like you said, there's a little bit of those. There's little bobbleheads around there that you can find that'll raise your special up a little bit. They'll raise them up a point. But I mean, I'm with you. I like to have charisma a little bit higher so I can, you know, I can barter better deals on weapons. It helps with conversation choices as well. You know, you can use an intimidation factor on some things. If you go down even further, like you can actually befriend or pacify different creatures and animals in the wasteland. Like I said, strength, because God, you got to carry stuff.
Yes.
And there's a lot of stuff. We'll always run into armor pieces and stuff like that. So, you know, you want to carry a lot of things. And perception, because you want to shoot. And if you upgrade luck, it helps you find better stuff. You'll find better stuff and more abundance of stuff. Like, you'll find more ammo than you would have without a higher luck, with a lower luck ability. Or you'll find better armor pieces with a higher luck ability.
some of the rarer armor pieces and rarer weapons and stuff like that. So, it's interesting to try and build a character because you don't know, you want to know, I mean, you don't know what's going to be useful out there. I find that hacking and lockpicking is totally useful in this game.
Yes.
I am a master lockpicker and an advanced hacker, and it's helping me a lot. It gets you through a lot of different things, and you find a lot of different things.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend getting those boosted up as well, because that's something that you just cannot access otherwise. You know, so obviously strength, if you don't have enough room to carry things, you can always go back, you know, drop things off and come back to that spot and pick them back up. But, you know, if you're not a master locksmith, you're not getting into a master lock until you go become a master locksmith. And then who knows if you'll actually remember where that spot is. So, yeah, I totally recommend as well getting those perks, those abilities boosted up as quickly as possible, because they'll really come in handy.
Yeah. And I mean, other than that, I'm just thoroughly enjoying the game. I'm ready to play it again, like right now. And I want to go back and see what I can do differently.
Yeah.
Here's a tip for anybody that's going to start playing this game. Once you get through that tutorial part in the vault, save before you go up the elevator. That way you don't have to go through that whole tutorial thing all over again. You can just save before you go into the elevator when it asks you, are you sure you're finalized with everything? And you can just change it right there. So you don't have to go through the whole intro scene basically again. So it saves you some trouble. You know, you can change your special, your appearance, everything. And other than that, I mean, it's a great game. But is it game of the year?
That's a great question. I agree. It is also a really, really good game. I was completely blown away. I was a little nervous going into this game because of my previous experiences with Fallout 3 and my attitude towards Bethesda games as a whole. So this is going to be interesting conversation coming up next week, and what Troy was kind of alluding to was Game of the Year talk. We actually got word recently, the Game Awards, hosted by Jeff Keighley, the guy who used to host the VGA/VGXs. The Video Game Awards is his show where he actually drops his own money initially to help fund this thing. It launched last year for the first time, 2014. It had a lot of things good, had a lot of things wrong. You could tell it was the first time this show had been put on. Jeff Keighley, I thought, did a pretty good job. He had some really amazing moments, and supposedly he lost a little bit of money, but it was not enough to deter him from doing it again. So, the Game Awards comes back on December 3rd. Obviously, that is a few weeks away, so it's not like it's this week or anything. But definitely encourage everybody to check that out, because it was a pretty good show, and I appreciate what Jeff Keighley is doing for the industry. And seems like the nominees are really interesting for the categories this year. They're making it pretty difficult. For anybody curious, the votes are decided on, or the winners are decided by votes from people within the industry. So mostly journalists make this up. This isn't publishers, because some of the publishers are helping to fund this thing, including Microsoft. I think Nintendo helped do it last year. So that doesn't mean that they're in cohort, is that the right word? They're helping out Jeff Keighley in any way other than just helping to pay for the show. So it actually is voted on people from sites like Polygon, Eurogamer, that kind of thing. So it is a pretty important night for video games, because it's not like how the VGAs used to be, where it was just fan voted. So Call of Duty won every year or something like that. So definitely recommend people check that out. But because Game of the Year talk is coming up, it would be a perfect time for us VGCasters to discuss what is our Game of the Year. And Troy and I are going to be having that conversation in 1 week. That's right. All of the greatest games from this year will be discussed. Okay, maybe not all of them. Most of the greatest games from this year will be discussed in 1 week by us. We'll go through, Troy, what, like Metal Gear? We'll go through Tomb Raider, Fallout, Well, we won't go through Bloodborne because neither of us played Bloodborne.
Yeah, I was about to say. Batman.
What else was there? Batman. That won't be on the list. Let's just go ahead and make that pretty clear.
Are you sure? Because they got it under Best Art Direction. So, I mean,
yeah, so let's we'll talk about not only the categories that the Game Awards is going to be announcing, as well as the nominees for those categories, but we'll also be talking about what our personal choices for some of these major categories are. So while we might not follow the exact ebb and flow of the game awards, you know, so best art design, best sound, best music, you know, that we may stay away from that and just do like, what is our favorite game? What was the one we had the most fun with? What was the one we thought was the best? That kind of thing. Best bang for your buck. Something along those lines, to keep it a little less formal and a little bit more fun. But that will be, like we said, in 1 week. So probably this goes out on a Tuesday. So expect that sometime within Monday or Tuesday, which I think would be the 21st or the 22nd. I'm sorry, 23rd or the 24th of November. So trying to get that out just before the actual Game Awards launch. So check that out. And Troy, if you've got nothing else, we're going to wrap this show up.
No, I ain't got nothing. Let's go back to play Fallout. No, I don't have anything.
Yeah, so we're going to fall out of our chairs here if we keep talking because we both want to go play Fallout some more. But yeah, that should mostly wrap us up here at VGCast. As always, if you guys like what you heard, if you like what you see, please give us a thumbs up, give us a like, give us a review and or a rating to show us some support. Feel free to subscribe via iTunes on your iOS devices, via Podcast Addict or Pocket Cast. I'm sorry, I always get that one confused, on Android. Or you can just simply go to Podomatic.com. Hopefully soon we'll be on Stitcher as well as Google Play Music whenever that rolls out for podcasters, which should be soon. So thanks, Troy, for helping us out again. And as always, you guys, keep gaming.